from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Today's Supreme Court ruling in the case of Mark Janus versus AFSCME is an historic victory for freedom of speech and freedom of affiliation for public sector employees. It is also an historic victory for taxpayers who for too long have borne the unfair high cost of the conflicts of interest inherent when government union leaders negotiate with but also support politicians.
The labor movement of late has been under attack for a number of years now. This is just the latest attack.
From the day that Rauner came into office, his goal, and he was very explicit about it, was to destroy public sector unions, to prevent public employees from having the right to collectively bargain, to drive down the wages of public servants, to make it harder for people to be able to afford health care. Those are his goals. Teachers, firefighters, every other public servant in the state recognizes that Bruce Rauner is not acting in their interest.
We now have 5 million public sector union members, or non-union members, that can make their own choice as to whether they want to be a part of that union. It will not affect the collective bargaining. Unions will have that continued right. It's just that the worker now has the ability to make his own decision or her decision.
Well, that's Mark Janus, his name now tied to this Supreme Court ruling that many say is a blow to unions. We'll talk about what the court had to say, what it all means coming up, and also some more names could be on the ballot for governor this fall as third parties and independents filed this week. We'll discuss all of that and more on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler, the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also with us, Daisy Contreras, NPR Illinois reporter, and our guest this week is Bernie Schoenberg. He's the political columnist and writes for government for the State Journal Register in Springfield. And Bernie, good to have you on once again.
Nice to be back.
Let's start off with this ruling, Janus versus AFSCME. That's the name of it. Mark Janus, a state worker, he took exception to having to pay what are known as fair share dues to the AFSCME union. He's not a member of AFSCME, but he's covered under the collective bargaining. And Bernie, clarify what these dues are. What's really at the center of this case?
Well, if you join the union, then you pay your dues and you there's a portion that you pay that goes to political activity for the union, but most of it goes to pay for the people who sit at the table, do collective bargaining, for the people who help you if you have a disciplinary case against you and you want representation. The people who have decided not to join the union under current Illinois law and as upheld in, I guess, a 41-year-old U.S. Supreme Court decision before last week's, if you would pay something what the unions called fair share dues, what Governor Rauner would call, you know, forced fees that you shouldn't have to pay because you don't believe in what the union does. And that would be just for the collective bargaining and representation side. In other words, okay, you're not going to join us, but you won't do our political stuff. But, you know, we still represent you. You still get the raises we negotiate for you, so you should pay something for that. Mark Janus and others said that's not fair. It's a freedom of speech issue. The governor clearly says, well, everything public sector unions do is political in a sense because you are trying to figure out at that bargaining table how to spend public money. So that side won with the new Supreme Court, including Neil Gorsuch, who President Trump put on. It tipped the balance and it was a 5-4 decision.
Well, I think also I've heard, among other names that Mark Janus has been called, the term freeloader has been brought up by some people in the union who say, hey, you're right, you're going to get these benefits whether you're a member of the union or not, so you should pay into this. That's certainly, I think, one of the rallying cries among the union members right now is that, hey, if you're going to be part of this collective bargaining, you should chip in.
Yeah, it's certainly the way to look at it in a negative light, or free rider, some say, I guess. And the idea is, again, you'll get the pension, you'll get the pay, you'll get the representation, but you're not paying anything for it. And even if you weren't in the union, you were paying less for it under current situation. So We will see where that goes. You know, Mark Janus just says it's a freedom of speech thing. I don't want to, as an American, I don't want to join an organization that I don't believe in. And so I'm going to go to work at a workplace and I won't have to. So that's their view. Unions have a very different view. Democrats have a different view. I mean, J.B. Pritzker, who's running against Governor Rauner, you know, called this a part of his continuing attack on unions, similar to what those union leaders said that you had quoted at the beginning of the show. So the balance has tipped in federal law because of this case.
Now, we're talking public sector unions, but Bernie, I know you're a member of a union, right, with your newspaper, and Charlie has been a member and I guess still is a member of the union.
I make no bones about it. Right. People who listen to this show know that whatever the issue comes up, I make a specific point to preface or mention that, yes, I am a lifetime member of the Chicago Newspaper Guild. I'm a member of the union here at the University of Illinois Springfield, and I'm a strong believer in organized labor and in their rights. And in response to the notion that, well, I don't want to join this organization because I don't believe in them, I suspect that Mr. Janus probably is not going to go out and want to negotiate his own contract. And if the union achieves a pay raise, I'm pretty sure that Mr. Janus will say, no, I don't want that pay raise because I don't believe in what you guys are doing. And by law, the union has to represent everybody. And so that's where I have a problem with it. And yeah, freeloading is when you get something and you don't pay for it.
I have heard that there may be some discussion about either changing the law or seeing what the unions can do to not represent non-members in certain ways now, and we'll see what happens with that. By the way, the newsroom at the State Journal Register voted, it's been more than 4 years ago, to form a union group, and it has met from time to time. There's no contract yet,
sure.
Although maybe soon.
Well, let's talk about the union side because, Daisy, you've talked to several different unions about this. What are they worried after this decision?
Yeah, well, union leaders are definitely worried to some extent. As was mentioned earlier, public sector unions can't collect fair share fees from non-members. So these are the fees that go toward collective bargaining. Now, this could potentially be a financial blow to unions who need members and the money to do the work that they do on behalf of the workers that they represent. Some of the union leaders I spoke to after the court's ruling, like Greg Kelly, who we heard earlier in the beginning, he's president for SEIU Healthcare Illinois. He said he's definitely worried, but not having enough money down the line. But the court's opinion was something that he and other union leaders were already expecting. So he said members are ready to fight back, organize, and try to do the best that they can moving forward. And the same thing with AFSCME, the union at the heart of this opinion. Their Illinois executive director, Roberta Lynch, said members are disappointed that the majority of the U.S. Supreme Court justices ruled and sided with what she called billionaires trying to do away with workers' rights and hurt middle and poor working people in Illinois.
I'm not trying to take a side on either part of this here because I do understand maybe where people are coming from on each side. But at the same time, in Illinois government, and Charlie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but being a member of the AFSCME union especially has been a lot better than being a person who's not covered or not a part of any type of union and not covered under collective bargaining, because a lot of those folks have not had raises in state government for quite a while.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, if you listen to the governor's comments, part of it was this is good for taxpayers. Well, why is it good for taxpayers? Because we're going to be having to spend less on health care with a weakened union. We won't have to give them the same kind of wage increases with a weakened union, and we'll be able to basically lower the costs of our personnel. So that's where he's coming from in all this.
You know, the governor has talked a lot about and when he talks about property taxes, we should lower the mandates on local governments. Mm-hmm. Well, what he often means is similar to when he tried unsuccessfully early in his career to get some local units of government to become right-to-work zones where, you know, nobody would have to join a union. But he also, even in some of his budget proposals or political proposal at the beginning of each year, has said, let's allow local governments not to collectively bargain on certain issues because that, again, could save them money. So, of course, the unions would say, well, that means you're going to pay less. He says that frees local governments from mandates so they'll have more money. Same kind of thing Charlie just said.
Yeah, and with Rauner, it's not just public sector unions because one of the things he also has been – he's proposed as part of his so-called turnaround agenda was to do away with prevailing wage. Prevailing wage means private sector employees who do public work have to pay their employees based on basically what is the going union rate. And so those aren't necessarily public employees in the same sense that somebody who works for the Department of Human Services is, or a firefighter, or a police officer, or a school teacher, but they would be affected by his attempt to weaken those rules that basically protect working people.
Well, certainly Governor Rauner was waiting for this decision. Of course, people might forget he really tried to push this issue himself and was sort of locked out by the court at one point by basically saying you didn't have standing in this.
Right. Well, not only that, early in his first year, he issued an executive order saying mm-hmm. that fair share, you know, what the unions call the fair share workers will no longer have to pay those dues, and then he was blocked from doing that. I know Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General, was opposed to that at the time. Then he had a part in filing this lawsuit. Then it was found that he did not have standing as a state employee, and then plaintiffs, including Mr. Janus, were found. And so the governor, you know, there are varying views on if he should get a lot of credit for this or a little, because other cases had been moving in this direction as well, and the Supreme Court was moving in this direction as well. But he clearly made moves to get this done. And I heard him on a WGN radio morning interview this week after the Janus decision, and I haven't heard him more happy or relaxed.
Well, Daisy, what does it mean?
Let me add to
okay, go ahead.
In all honesty, I think Governor Rauner should send a bouquet of roses to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who stalled off on the vacancy created when Justice Scalia died, the Supreme Court vacancy, refused to consider the nominee to fill that vacancy proposed by then-President Barack Obama, holding out, hoping that a Republican would win. As it turned out, it was President Donald Trump, and would be able to appoint somebody who was going to be conservative and who would come down on the side of big business, corporate elites, in my words, as opposed to working people.
Kept an potential Illinois justice off the court, because Merrick Garland went to Niles North High School in, I think, Skokie.
Right. Yeah. Let me come back to this, but first let's talk politics a little bit, because Rauner is certainly, you know, taking the victory lap on this. And then, of course, we've heard J.B. Pritzker as well. Let's start with Rauner. Politically, does he get some type of boost from this?
I mean, my guess is that he is. He's, you know,
from his base,
at least, right. But, you know, even then, he's a governor that's trying to grapple with this Republican Party here in Illinois that's very divided. So he has that to deal with looking up for elections. So in a way, I feel like he's downplaying his victory a little, because he said, well, he's very happy with, you know, this is a victory for freedom of speech and for workers and taxpayers. He's also said that he supports workers, non-unionized and in the unions. So he's kind of like in the middle, trying to, I guess, kind of make sure that he's not overly happy, but also, you know, looking to November. He has Sam McCann that he has to worry about. He's the third-party candidate for governor who supports unions. He has, like you mentioned, Sean, J.B. Pritzker, who also has a lot of backing from unions. So he's a governor that, yes, he can take a lot of victory from this U.S. Supreme Court ruling, but at the same time, he has to think about what's coming ahead in November.
And Bernie Pritzker was quick to jump. In fact, he was in Springfield just a matter of a couple of hours right after this decision came down.
This was to meet with veterans as part of his, you know, run-or-failed political tour, as it were. But then he came out and talked to reporters. He was there was a backdrop of many union members and officials behind him downtown Springfield, you know, and he said this is an attack on unions, and we'll see where that goes. I did talk to Professor Chris Mooney, who used to be at this campus at UIS, it is now at University of Illinois Chicago, who said he also thinks Rauner will get some benefit from this, because conservatives who are unhappy with Rauner's social issue situation, in which he approved a bill after saying he wouldn't for some taxpayer-paid abortions, this might give conservatives at least the ability to look at Rauner and say, well, maybe he's not so bad because he's done this because clearly lowering the power of public sector unions is something that conservative Republicans have long sought. So there would be good in that. Whereas unions, who were going to be probably for Pritzker, also possibly for Sam McCann, but mostly for the Democrat, were already enraged as much as they could possibly be against Bruce Rauner because of the rhetoric that he has espoused about unions and government, you know, union bosses and their power since Inauguration Day and certainly during the campaign.
Yeah, Charlie, I can't imagine he's hurt by this because to some extent the polling I had seen at one point, and I'm trying to remember how far back it went, but showed him polling pretty poorly, you know, overall, still maybe 20% of union households, something like that. So he wasn't going to get probably a lot more of that anyway. So in some ways, this helps shore up his base.
Yeah, it does. But on the other hand, to be a dissenting voice here, it occurs to me that when he beat Pat Quinn, part of the winning coalition for him involved public sector workers who were very upset about Pat Quinn for trying to push through this legislation to reduce pension benefits. A lot of union people, a lot of state workers that I know were very upset with Quinn, and they're not going to vote for that Pat Quinn, you know, what a
Yeah, so how could Rauner be worse, right?
Yeah, how could Rauner be worse? Well, from a union perspective, they found out. Now, I'm guessing those folks, if he had 20% of union households, my guess is he's not going to get 20% again. And so the question is, do those people now, do they turn to Sam McCann because they're maybe conservative on the social issues? Or do they go, if they're not worried about social issues, do they go with J.B. Pritzker, who's made it very clear that he's going to be on the side of the unions and the working people?
Well, that's a perfect segue to move into the fact that some nominating petition filing, a deadline took place this week for third parties, independents. And Sam McCann, one of those names, also another name, Cash Jackson, Libertarian Party candidate for governor, on that list. There were several others as well, and we'll see if many of them are able to make it on the ballot. There's already been some observers thinking that some filed so few petitions they won't be there, and we'll just see as the weeks go on. But let's talk a little bit about those two. Let's start with McCann. And Bernie, you have covered him for a number of years. He's a state senator, elected as a Republican from an area just south of Springfield, covers the part of the Springfield area, but I'm sure a lot of people don't know who he is. So who is Sam McCann? Why is this interesting that he's getting into this race?
Yeah, well, he kind of came in with the Tea Party wave, I think, in 2010. He beat Deanna DiMuzio, who was in the Senate, became a senator after the death of her husband, Vince DiMuzio, who was DiMuzio of Carlinville, who had been chairman of the Democratic Party of Illinois for a time, in addition to being a reform-minded and later just kind of regular Democrat over many, many years. And Sam McCann, very conservative on social issues, but makes the case over time that he listens to his constituents, many of whom are state employees. So in the battles that developed with the governor versus AFSCME, the big state employee union with 38,000 workers, there was in particular one piece of legislation where Democrats and AFSCME were pushing to allow arbitration to determine the outcome of the ongoing budget impasse between AFSCME and the Rauner administration. That contract expired in 2015 and is still not resolved. And McCann voted with the unions because he said 95% of all of the contacts he had from his constituents said, you've got to vote for the arbitration. And he did that. He claims that Governor Rauner told him, if you vote that way, I'll destroy you and your family. Governor Rauner denies saying that. He laughed when asked, of course, because that's what he does. But he said he didn't say that. But 2 years ago, the governor backed a primary opponent to Sam McCann, and it was a vicious multi-million-dollar battle with all kinds of horrible campaign commercials about Sam McCann. He ended up winning that and stayed in the Senate. However, this year, Sangamon County is a big part of the several counties in Sam McCann's 50th Senate district. They endorsed a guy named Steve McClure, another Republican, over Sam. And then Sam McCann announced he wouldn't run as a Republican for state Senate again. And ultimately, he decided to run as a conservative party, which is a third party because it's not established in Illinois like Democrats or Republicans, candidate for governor, and needed, unlike the 5,000 signatures that Democrats and Republicans need to get on a primary ballot, to get on the general election ballot as an independent or third party candidate, you need five times that, 25,000. This week, with his running mate, Aaron Marine of Riverton, Illinois. Riverton. Yes, that's easy to mess up. They wheeled in their, they said about 65,000 signatures unfiled, and they had help of Operating Engineers Local 150, a union that likes Pritzker but has also claims to have Democrats and Republicans in their ranks. But many people think they will be able to stay on the ballot with the way the signatures were collected, despite an objection that's expected. We'll see if that happens. Most people think this would hurt Governor Rauner because social conservatives might go for Sam McCann if they don't think they can go for a Democrat Pritzker. Sam McCann says he doesn't care who he hurts. He's trying to win. So we'll see what happens.
And before we move on and talk a little bit more politics on those, let's talk about Cash Jackson, Libertarian Party. They filed a whole slate of candidates statewide and also I think close to double at least what they needed. And that was quite a large number. So Daisy, who is Cash Jackson?
Yeah, I think he ended up getting
47,000.
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's a retired Navy veteran and who wants to legalize recreational marijuana. He doesn't want to see changes to gun laws in Illinois. He's very big on family law. He wants to make moms and dads equal in court. He's someone actually who's battling his own issues with paying child support. In the past, he's spent time in jail for not paying his child support. He's in the press conference earlier this week. Even Bernie asked that question, well, how much do you owe? And he said he has no idea how much he owes, but he still gets to see his kids. So he's very behind legislation that would allow 50-50 time with kids during a divorce. He's also changed his name from Benjamin Adam Winderwittle to Grayson Cash Jackson, and that's actually going to appear on the ballot if he makes it.
So both of those we've laid out, and it sounds like Jackson is pretty typical on a lot of these issues of what a libertarian candidate goes for, you know, the less government oversight on whether it's guns or, you know, marijuana, those types of things. Charlie, does either candidate – Bernie alluded to that as well. Does either candidate get hurt by these two being on the ballot, or one hurt more than the other?
I would suspect that to the extent anyone gets hurt, it's probably Governor Rauner, in the sense that people who would support McCann – probably because of the social issues, they're certainly not going to vote for J.B. Pritzker. But if you're someone who's motivated by these social issues, you're not going to find anything to like in Rauner or in Pritzker. McCann is someone that you could relate to because you would think he shares the same values I do and these other two guys don't. And so because those types of voters tend these days to be more Republican in their leanings, I think it would take votes away from the governor as opposed to Pritzker. I don't know. We'll see, I guess, in November. I'm always, what would you say, nervous about making these predictions because one of the things that I've learned over time from watching this stuff, you never know.
Yeah, well, everybody got 2016 presidential wrong, so there you go.
Well, now, speaking of McCann, I do want to go back. We mentioned Cash Jackson's had some issues, you know, that might not be as flattering for him. But McCann, you've written about a lot of those, Bernie.
You know, he has never been charged with any wrongdoing, but there have been liens filed at the county clerk's office in Macoupin County for back taxes from his company. And he has said that these are misunderstandings, and he's working through them. He's also claimed many tens of thousands of dollars in mileage, particularly from his campaign account. And he bought like a fancy new vehicle for his campaign. And he just talks about how much he drives. And some people think, how can you possibly drive as much as that mileage would take? But again, he has faced questions like that. Those are things that became an issue in the campaign 2 years ago that he ended up winning in the tough primary. And you know, he claims that it's just tough to be in public office. And these financial problems that he has shows that he can relate to the real person, the regular person.
Well, we'll come,
so
we'll
that's where we're at.
We'll come back to these guys later in the year because we'll watch and see if they do actually make it on the ballot. And probably will, be interesting
we'll
to watch.
Out.
what, soon?
Soon,
it?
Yeah.
A couple of weeks.
Isn't there a week after the
filing? Well, Monday is the deadline to file objections. But after that, those objections would go to, you know, discovery. People mm-hmm. would have to look through records and the signatures and then a hearing officer. And then ultimately, I believe by August when the ballot is supposed to be certified, the State Board of Elections would have to rule.
Okay. So we'll keep watching that. Just a couple of minutes left here. And Bernie, I'm going to go to you on this because you've written about it. But the governor, it seems like we mentioned this before. Every time he gets on the radio, he seems to say something that maybe comes back to haunt him a bit. Governor Rauner was talking earlier and said some things about Champaign that angered some people in that area.
Well, it was, again, a WGN radio interview, which sometimes he gets a friendly ear. But he called Champaign-Urbana wonderful, but then talked about business and said, it's very hard to keep a company of more than six people there. There's no convenient transportation, not much of a workforce, and it's very hard. Which offended a lot of people in Champaign. I know WCIA did a significant story about this. A lot of people reacted on Twitter and in other social media and in various news interviews saying, hey, Champaign has, you know, this giant university. It has a lot of tech companies, et cetera. What are you talking about? One thing that I noticed and wrote about in the column is just that Mike Frericks, a Democratic state treasurer who now lives in Champaign, was pretty rough because he generally has stayed out of the partisan political fray. But one of his original tweets was, real men lead, thin-skinned men wear costumes and call people names. Enough of this nonsense, Governor Rauner. The costume thing is that Rauner sometimes wears his motorcycle garb or work garb downstate. And he also said, I have watched Governor Rauner's contempt for downstate the last 3 years as he wears different costumes and his speech changes when he leaves Chicago, but his disdain was on full display. Leaders bring people together. They don't tear others down. Frericks softened that initial tweet to make it less personal about real men and called it real leaders, I think. But said, you know, it just got under his skin that the governor would so misunderstand and make so many misrepresentations about a major downstate twin city with a giant university by saying those things. And I guess the bus system there gets a lot of accolades too statewide. So there was a lot of pushback. And the governor actually called Channel 3 after meeting with mayors of Champaign and Urbana in Washington, where he was for the Janus case for a few days, to call and did an interview saying that basically he said he was taken out of context. I'm not sure how that is out of context, but basically apologized.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. Daisy?
So a handful of bills that were approved by the General Assembly during the last day of session on May 31st have not been sent to the governor as of this morning when I last checked. Legislation, after approved by both chambers, needs to get to the governor within 30 days. We've seen during recent years that bill sponsors are probably taking up those days to try and get support from the governor before he gets to him. So I would not be surprised to see those pending bills being sent to the governor later today.
And Charlie?
Well, Daisy, you mentioned the end of the month for the period for getting legislation to the governor from the General Assembly. Well, it's also a time when the state is supposed to come up with $300 million to pay nursing home costs for elderly residents who should be on Medicaid, or the assumption is most of them will be on Medicaid, but the determination has not been made. Apparently, our multi-million dollar fancy new technology isn't working as well as it should. And so the nursing homes for the last, I don't know, I guess for the last pretty close to a year have been fronting for the state and taking people and caring for them and hoping to get the money from the state. And a federal judge gave the state until the end of the month to come up with it.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, and Bernie Schoenberg. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. And production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.